Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. A Fort Wainwright soldier died of a gunshot, but the circumstances around the incident have not been released. U.S. Army Alaska reports that 21-year-old specialist Mason James Guckavan died of a gunshot wound in his barracks on Fort Wainwright a week ago. Investigators are looking into the case, but they haven't concluded whether the gun discharged intentionally or accidentally, and whether Guckavan's death was a homicide, accident, or suicide. Army Alaska spokesman John Pinnell says the barracks are similar to an extended stay hotel, and other soldiers were in the building at the time of the incident.
Being that it was in the barracks when the gunshot went off, it was pretty obvious that there was something amiss. Soldiers in the area immediately performed life-saving actions and called 911, alerted the medics and everybody. And unfortunately, the gunshot was severe enough that he could not be saved.
Pinnell could not say if any soldiers witnessed the actual shooting.
I don't know how many soldiers might have been in the area who could have been witnesses. That's all part of the ongoing investigation.
Pinnell says the shot that killed Guckavan was fired from a gun that was privately owned, but declined to say whether it was owned by Guckavan. He says announcement of the soldier's October 26th death was delayed to allow for next-of-kin notification and to ensure disclosing information would not create problems for investigators. A U.S. Army news release says Guckavan was an infantryman with the 1st Striker Brigade Combat Team. He was from Pennsylvania and had joined the Army in August 2016. One of the major issues separating the leading candidates in the Alaska governor's race is education. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchman reports.
Democrat Mark Begich and Republican Mike Donlavey come from different backgrounds. Begich has been outside the education system, relying on experts to shape his approach to the issue. His central educational proposal is a plan to put half of the state draw from permanent fund earnings into schools. The other half would pay out permanent fund dividends. He said at a recent debate that this would prevent school funding from being on the chopping block every year.
We need to protect it. It's the greatest equalizer for everyone in this state if we make sure it's funded properly and protected for generations to come.
Don Levy's perspective comes from working within the system as a teacher, school administrator, and school board member. Don Levy also laid out his plans during recent debates. He wants to require that all third graders read at grade level, all ninth graders learn algebra, and all career and technical students reach higher standards.
We have to reallocate resources to make sure that we're focused on those three core areas. If we do that, you're going to see our scores go up, and you're going to see kids have more of an opportunity.
Don Levy supports allowing more rural students to attend regional high schools. He says he wants to expand students' options and doesn't want to close schools in villages.
It's to enhance, not to take away.
It's not clear how he would pay for both, while also cutting the state budget overall. When he chaired the Senate subcommittee that proposes education funding, he supported eliminating all state funding for pre-kindergarten. He also backed cuts to other state funding for programs that prepare young children for school, such as Head Start. In contrast, Begich wants to provide universal pre-kindergarten.
There's no question early education is the best investment we can make.
Don Levy has also supported a constitutional amendment to allow public money to go to private or religious education, though he says he wouldn't push the amendment now. When he was on the Matanuska-Susitna School Board, Don Levy supported expanding support for homeschooling. He hasn't focused on that in his campaign for governor. Begich opposes vouchers, saying that public education is a foundation for communities and the economy. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Two longtime community activists are running a tight race for Fairbanks State House District 1, a seat vacated by Representative Scott Kawasaki, who is running for Alaska Senate. As KUAC's Robin reports, Democrat Catherine Dodge and Republican Bart Lebon both have long resumes of volunteerism that may make it hard for some voters to choose between them.
Catherine Dodge just finished 6 years on the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly. Her background is in economic development and community policy. Bart Lebon also served 6 years in public office on the local school board. He worked most of his life in banking. With backgrounds in economics and finance, Alaska's economy is a top issue for both candidates. Lebon says the state has to use its resources.
clean burning natural gas into the community here in the, within the next couple years. Eielson Air Force Base mission expanding. The F-35s are coming up here. The university is an economic engine. Fort Knox is a big economic engine. So creating wealth is a big part.
Dodge has long experience with how municipalities are affected by sales taxes, income taxes, or oil taxes, and says there are pros and cons of each.
To start with, what are the basic services? What is it that we must have? Then you can price that out. What does that cost? And then we can say, what are our revenue sources? Whatever we agree to has got to ask a fair share of Alaskans, of businesses, and of non-residents.
The winner of this race will represent the district that pretty much covers the city limits of Fairbanks, where most of the area's jobs are, health needs are, and crime is. The two candidates disagree on how the state might help Alaskans who have mental health and substance abuse problems. LeBon says the health and social services budget is too big already.
We're already investing a considerable amount of money. Maybe it needs to be better managed.
Does that include the Alaska Mental Health Trust? Does that include expanded Medicare? We don't have psychiatrists in town. There's no rooms for adolescents to be admitted. People, if they can pay, are 30 to 60 days out. A mental health crisis is a right now crisis. That is not a 30 to 60 days, I'll see you soon. That's how you get suicide.
Dodge has a PhD in human and organizational systems. She gave an example of working on the team to keep Eielson Air Force Base open when the BRAC, the Base Realignment and Closure Commission, selected it. She says her experience like that with communities in transition gives her an edge as Alaska deals with more families who must move when their villages are damaged by climate change.
I know one role that I certainly see for the state, and that is with CCHRC. They've been working with the villages to come up with affordable ways to replace housing in the new village. At a minimum, the state should be working with the community to have a community-led solution.
But LeBon says he wants a question answered.
Who's the responsible party? If I were a legislator and I was told that we needed to fund the relocation of a home or village because of this problem, I want to know who's the responsible party.
LeBon was known in the community as a college basketball standout before he became a banker and then volunteered with various community organizations. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
A longtime Fairbanks International Airport staffer has been appointed to the facility's top job. Angie Spear has been appointed by Governor Bill Walker to be airport manager, a position she's been acting in since July. Walker says Spear worked her way up through the airport staff over 13 years and is the first woman to serve as Fairbanks airport manager. I'm Dan Bross.